Welcome to another...
The official podcast of The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
Do you hear that, Earth? The Leaky Cauldron.
Just go! You're wasting time!
Welcome to Pottercast, your number one audio source for Harry Potter news, theories, discussion, as well as info straight from the makers of the books and films themselves, like me, Matt Lewis. I play Neville Longbottom in the Harry Potter films, and I'm very happy to be here helping introduce your hosts, the Pottercast trio, Melissa, John, and Sue.
It's a week till Hanukkah, 15 days of shopping, left till Christmas, and so why not waste an hour, spend an hour... with Pottercast! It's Pottercast number 67. We're taking your time away this holiday season. Yay! Welcome.
No, if they're smart, they're walking around the mall an iPod right now, listening to us while they shop.
With your iPod, which you cannot get in the Harry Potter version anymore, despite what you may see on thecauldronshop.com.
It is because I bought all of them up.
John bought all of them up.
You Grinch, you.
Okay.
We hope
you're happy as you go shopping, walking around with Pottercast in your ears. In this show, you're going to get a great fan interview about a teacher who uses Harry in the classroom. Our Canon Conundrums this week is all about whether Harry will go to the locked room in the ministry in Book 7. And we'll get into that in a minute. Lots of news to talk about. But first, let's hear from our friends at Borders.
Today's Pottercast is brought to you by Borders. Get a magical start to your holiday shopping by visiting Borders for all sorts of bewitching books, spellbinding music, and enchanting movies. Pottercast listeners can get 30% off any item at Borders by clicking on the coupon at the top of Pottercast.com. Visit BorderStores.com to locate the Borders nearest you.
Excellent. 30% off around now. Sounds
excellent.
Sounds pretty good.
I love the deals, baby. Bring the deals.
Seriously, man.
I've pretty much done all of my shopping so far from Borders.
Speaking of deals,
all my Christmas shopping.
If you vote for Pottercast on Podcast Alley, you'll get a special free podcast next week.
What a bonus!
Whoa!
Bonus.
Totally free.
I love a bonus.
Such a bargain. Also, remember that we're going to be at Phoenix Rising in May of 2007. We'll be doing a live Pottercast right from the opening dinner at that event, so go to thephoenixrises.org to register. And now let's go over in here.
That'll be something.
It's going to be great. It's going to have a nice jazzy feel to it because we'll be in the land of Louie and Ella.
Awesome.
Or sort of.
That's awesome.
Okay, so why don't we go hear from Sue's news? John, did you have something to say?
Am I going to have to wear pants during that Pottercast?
Yeah, maybe, John.
I very rarely wear pants during Pottercast.
I am going to go read the news because I can't even deal with that image. Okay.
I want to hear it, Sue.
It might be a John-free Pottercast.
Oh, I got to go back to bed? Sweet.
Not now. I mean, if you're not going to wear pants, then, you know.
Oh, well, we shall see.
Go ahead, Sue.
Well, for those that might have missed it last weekend, there was quite a bit of film news. And in case you missed it, there were 13 brand new clips that aired on ABC Family Channel here in the United States, which previewed Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. With over 7 minutes of mostly entirely new footage, we now have screen caps of these amazing new clips. And we saw some new things such as the Black Family Tree, Voldemort at the Ministry, and the original Order of the Phoenix, which includes the Marauders. You can be sure and check out these many great screen caps as well as the videos to download via our galleries. In a related note, we have now had a sneak preview of the first of the Order of the Phoenix toys, which are due next spring. Cards Inc. has provided a preview of the Harry Potter action figure, which shows Harry and a stag Patronus. Another film-related news, actor Dan Radcliffe has appeared at the Australian Film Awards in Melbourne, Australia, and there are now links to video of his appearance, which you can find it by clicking on leakynews.com. Actor Alan Rickman, who plays Severus Snape, of course, has been confirmed to appear in the upcoming Tim Burton film production of Sweeney Todd, which is a musical. And this movie will co-star Phoenix actress Helena Bonham Carter, as well as Academy-nominated actor Johnny Depp. Mr. Depp and Mr. Rickman are set to perform a duet, which should be interesting to say the least. And avast, speaking of the fine Johnny Depp or Captain Jack Sparrow, sales of the Pirates of the Caribbean DVD tied the record held by Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire with over 5 million in sales the first day the DVD went up for sale in the public. Amazing. Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire DVD does remain one of the year's best sellers. Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince was chosen as top kids pick for 4th to 6th graders in a recent poll held by Scholastic, the U.S. publishers of the Harry Potter novels. And speaking of the books, author J.K. Rowling is now on a list of Forbes magazine of the top earning authors. Joe falls second on this list behind Da Vinci Code author Dan Brown, with the magazine guesstimating that Joe has earned $75 million this year. Wow. Well, for your most complete Harry Potter news and information, you can always find it at leakynews.com, which is updated continually. And back to the show we go.
And we're back.
We're back from the news.
Thanks to lots of cool stuff.
Oh, my goodness. Let me tell you, I still have not recovered from those videos from the ABC previews.
I know. And now we have over 1,000 images from them in our gallery.
Unbelievable.
Jeez.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah. But if you look closely at those images, my gosh, you see a lot of really interesting things.
Yes.
Helena Bonham Carter in front of the Black Family
Tree.
Yes,
which shocked me because, boys and girls, look closely. You see her name, and what else do we see? A lot of interesting things.
A lot of interesting things. Voldemort walking out behind Harry in the Ministry.
What?
That's a little like, oh my God. It's like, are you supposed to be there? Because he's so far away.
Yeah.
It's like, you wouldn't think that would be his shot to have him, his entrance shot into the stand. He's like way in the back.
But that was him.
Be like, is that guy lost? Is he in the crew? Who's
he's kind of wandering through. Yeah. But at least
we have the
at least he had on his black robes. I did notice he's got those wispy black things on again, so.
Does he did not get himself?
Does he have shoes on yet?
Hmm.
Was he wearing shoes yet?
You know, I don't think so. I don't think he was.
Is that guy just not like shoes?
Well, I don't understand. Like,
not even to.
When you're that powerful, do you not get splinters or anything?
Maybe just kind of like.
I'd like to know this.
I think maybe they weren't in the shot.
I think they'll have, like, you know, like Voldemort slippers, like golden slippers or something, you know, like snake slippers.
Because if you look at the Room of, Requirement footage, you see they're all wearing kind of blue footies over their shoes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And those things don't show up in the shots, but they wear them so that they can protect the sets while they're filming.
Oh, see? That's interesting.
That's
very clever.
Right. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
This is true.
We also saw the Weasley family Christmas at Grimmauld Place. That was
It was awesome. Did you see him in his hat? I love those hats.
Yeah. It's great. It's fantastic.
Now, you get those from like when they have crackers. Is that right? The tradition in the UK when you pull those things? Fabulous. So cool. Love it.
And Sue, you had a favorite.
I did. You know, this was a thing to me that proved to me, now I know that people are concerned about David Yates and what they're going to do, but there's things that they've cut out in this movie, and we all lament this. But here's something that they filmed that they could have easily just written off or not shown, but they filmed that scene of the moving photograph of the original Order of the Phoenix. And my heart just, I was so happy and so sad at the same moment when I saw this, because there they were. And it was the Marauders standing together. James was standing next to Sirius, and Peter Pettigrew was there. And you know that passage in when she wrote how Harry's heart turned over when he recognized that Pettigrew was there, that had sent his dad to his death? And I couldn't believe it.
Was Peter even in Book 5 at all?
No.
Remember, there was that big question of where was he? And she
did they really cast him just for that picture?
Well, they didn't cast him. They brought him in for a day of filming. You know?
I mean, that's what I mean. Like, do they really be like, hey, dude, we got work for you. Sweet, I really wanted to be in this movie. What do I get to do? Oh, you're just going to come in one afternoon, and we're going to take a moving photograph of you and, like, 10 other people.
You know, but...
Do I even get my trailer back? No, you don't get your trailer back this time. Oh.
I'm sure that's exactly how it went. And not
great.
One day's work for a lot of pay. Excellent. I'm just going to take the money and run.
Just sit in the cafeteria. We'll call you when we need you.
But you know that they got all those people together. And there was another quick shot, too, that we saw as like a side shot. And it seemed to show James standing down, but Lily seemed to be on the other side of him. And she kind of looked like she was pregnant at the time. I don't know, but...
That'd be cool.
Why won't they be together?
She was sitting right next to James. And then it looked like it was looping down on the end. It looked like he had a little ponytail, but I really couldn't, you know, make it out because it was such a quick shot and it was kind of far away. But I mean, it just, I mean, there are the Marauders. I mean, to me, that hint, that effort that he put to put that Yates and those guys got to put them in their costume and put them all there.
Yeah.
It was fabulous. And it was that.
I think that was a poor decision.
You think it was a poor decision, do you?
They casted the young Marauders for the memory. Why wouldn't they just age them? It would be more accurate to where the photo would have been taken.
No!
I mean, James?
No, it's not.
What do you mean, no?
It's not, I don't know. It's a different era. They were 15. A lot happens between when you're 15. Right. And when
15 and 17?
Yeah. Okay. Let's compare it
to 15 and 30 something.
Why don't we take a picture of you at 15 and show you at 20, which is about when that was, and see what the differences are.
Well, I think it'd be a little less different than between 15 and like 35 or whatever the hell they're supposed to be after that around book five time.
No, but they're not around book five time. That's maybe Snape at book five time, but the picture of the Order, they were about 20.
Their early 20s, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. They never even survived till they were 20,
number one.
No, that's not
they
true.
Were
and,
much
they
older.
Did.
Not Lily
yes,
and James.
Yes, they were.
Yeah, they're somewhere around there. I don't know the actual age.
They were 19
no,
or more.
No, I think Steve did a thing and they were like in their early 20s, John.
Yeah. No, you could tell from the books. I've never looked at it there, but I've figured it out on my own before, and that's pretty much where they ended up.
How long did they get married after Hogwarts?
Well, I know because Joe
didn't
told me.
Didn't they get
me.
Married right out of Hogwarts?
We don't know. We don't know. It's nowhere in the books.
I think it is.
Okay. Well, regardless, they filmed that.
I think Professor McGonagall said it.
And I thought it made a difference because they've shown James Potter in all the movies. It's the same actor that they pulled him back. I thought that was fabulous using there again, and wasn't that Aberforth? Did we get our first peek at Aberforth standing next to I think
possibly.
So.
It was like Gandalf.
He did kind of, though, you're right.
It was a total Gandalf there. Like, guy, where'd you come from? Your film's been wrapped for years.
Maybe he was bored, couldn't get another job. He's wandering in one day.
Just wandering around in that costume.
But, you know, I think Melissa and I had talked about this. We were just amazed at how much they have shown in such a short amount of time. I mean, I'm just flabbergasted.
Yeah.
I mean, weren't you guys?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. It's really astounding. Like, you know, there's so much. I mean, I think we've seen a piece of almost everything at this point. I think it's too much.
Yeah. I did, too.
Well, they're clearly trying some sort of different approach than the last film. Maybe they were so secretive about the last film. Maybe this one, they're just loosening it up a little bit so that people aren't underwhelmed, so that they're totally overwhelmed
I heard what it
when
was.
They get it. What?
This will be good.
I heard about this recently, is that certain fan sites have been requesting more imagery to make more layouts, and so they complied and released all the clips and pictures they could possibly think of for the sake of making these layouts, and I think it's a wise decision.
Yeah, Harry Potter's page is looking pretty good these days. So,
I love Harry Potter's page.
So, anyway.
Harry Potter's page has more layouts than anyone online.
They do. So, what else? What else is important that we talk about here?
On those clips, or are we moving on to other news?
No, let's get on. People will go look at the clips. You can look at the clips. We'll make sure to put a link in the show notes so that you can see the clips and a link to our galleries with all the all the tons of big, big images of that.
Speaking of the movie, we did see the first look at the new toys that are coming. And Harry...
And they're from Prisoner of Azkaban. I don't get it.
He's got his Stag Patronus. And
I know, but half a Stag Patronus. And it looks like
it does.
It looks like they used an old model of a reindeer from a Christmas set.
Thank you. That is exactly what I thought.
Like, here, we're not using these anymore. Stick them on Harry's Patronus.
Harry and his friend Rudolph.
You know,
there we are.
He looks like Rudolph, or really like Comet
there you
or
go.
Something. But, you know, Dasher and Dancer and Prancer and Pong. Like, you know. It is. Yeah, it looks sort of cheesy.
I mean, he's got that sweater that he's wearing in the new movie, I guess, but it's just, I don't know. I mean, it looks...
Well, maybe it's being foretold that he actually does produce a Patronus in this film at the Owls.
Yeah, maybe so.
Well, I mean, yeah, with Dudley.
Oh, right, yeah. And in the DA. Yeah. So definitely, yeah, there's going to be
a... That's kind of a big, huge scene.
Yeah, but he's not wearing his uniform. That's why it threw me. Because in that thing, he's wearing his uniform.
Yeah.
You know? So it's just so...
Someone has made...
jarred.
Someone has made some of the funniest avatars from that picture. One of them, one of them says, Draco, I don't care what the fanfics say, get away from me.
That's
hilarious.
The man, they are something.
Oh, I love the fans. They crack me up.
Awesome. Well, there's one other thing. The Pirates of the Caribbean. Arrg, I mean, Johnny Depp. Vast. They took off with the record from the sales of the Goblet of Fire beat the one day sale of...
Well, maybe that wouldn't be so if our DVDs were
better.
Yeah,
I think maybe that would be the case. You know?
Aww.
Please. No, I'm going to say it. I'm going
to
say
it. I think they're on their way to making them better.
I hope so. I hope that's why they're pulling them.
The Phelps twins commentary was like the sign of the prophecy here.
Maybe it's just like, maybe that's a test balloon.
That was a test commentary.
Yeah. That's fine.
See how it goes.
Because I will be like the first one in line to buy those with the commentaries and all the bloopers and all that, the other behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's what the fans have been asking for so long that we had to go and do it.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, who the heck are we to make a commentary?
Well, we were the catalyst.
Oh, yeah, sure. Okay, John.
Yeah.
You call them up and tell them.
The podcast trio's done it.
Yeah. Not quite.
No, we have to.
I'm sure. But that's what I'm saying. It's like for fans have to resort to it to be the first commentary. Like, come on, Warner Brothers. We're asking for this here.
Oh, my goodness. But I just, like, come on.
Yeah.
Well, the other news item that I love.
This is yours. This is a good one.
I attend the Tale of Sweeney Todd. Is something, and is, I forgot the words. But anyway, Alan Rickman is going to be in Sweeney Todd's movie as Judge Turpin. And I gotta say, it's the only casting so far that I'm truly convinced of.
Really? You don't think Mr. Depp will do well?
I don't know. I think that he's cast because it's a Tim Burton film, and Tim Burton uses Johnny Depp whenever possible.
Oh, I hate that so much.
You know,
why don't they get married?
I love Johnny Depp.
Those two.
I love Johnny Depp. I think he's going to be... I don't know if he can sing like that. Sweeney Todd sings, you know, with passion and fire, and you need a fantastic voice for that. And I don't... And I'm worried about the movie because Tim Burton is so over the top that he's going to make it something it's not, and it's already an over the top music. I'm concerned.
Yeah.
I'm concerned. But Helena Bonham Carter acting Mrs. Lovett will be fantastic. I don't know about singing, but
he's
acting.
Yeah.
They don't need to cast these people who can sing in these singing movies. They had that one crazy guy that had never sang before in his life playing Phantom of the Darn Opera in that movie.
Yeah.
Not too long ago. So like, these movies, they go on regardless of if these people have had singing experience.
Well, here's the Cliff Notes version, guys, for those of you who don't know the tale of Sweeney Todd, very, very briefly. This judge seduces this woman, sends her husband away on a crime he didn't commit. The husband comes back in a murderous rage and starts killing all his customers and turning them into meat pies. So, and then selling them to London. So... Yeah, happy-go-lucky, fun movie.
And who does Snape get to play?
The gross, lecherous Judge Turpin. Ugh. Though with his subtle, with his sotto voce thing he does, it's going to
be awesome.
He's going to be very good at it.
I just the idea, though, I mean, does he have any scenes with Helena Bonham Carter? Does the judge?
Not really with Helena Bonham Carter. They might be present in the same area at some point. But he does obviously have scenes with Johnny Depp.
You know, those are two powerful actors, though. I mean, Mr. Depp is pretty good.
I haven't even seen that pirate movie.
Are you kidding? Are you being serious?
John.
I'm not a big fan.
Okay. Where's the rum gone?
That was your cue to email.
I've
John,
where has the rum gone? I need a drink after that, John. I can't believe you haven't seen that movie. It's fabulous. And all the effects? Come on. We'll watch it together.
Okay, well, anyway, we're getting off the topic here. Way off the topic.
It reminds me of the pirate ride in
Disneyland. It's my favorite ride. I love that.
Yo ho yo ho.
They just randomly added Johnny Depp.
I know.
In there.
They're like, it's the new Pirates ride. What they did was add a couple of.
He's at the end,
of,
right?
Of yeah, he's just sort of like.
That looked like yeah. Johnny Depp. Yeah, exactly.
There's Johnny Depp hiding behind a barrel.
Yeah, exactly.
There's Johnny Depp hiding behind a sail. There he is. They can't have him interact too much because then we'd have to reprogram the other pirates.
Yeah.
So yeah, just keep them hiding behind things.
All right, well, one other note. I'll talk about one book thing.
Yes,
that happened on Friday. Scholastic, the U.S. publishers of the Harry Potter books, had they do like a readathon and celebrate literacy and help promote it in schools. And they had a day where people read for like 33 and a half minutes for 2007. And they had a poll, and Haplet Prince was voted top pick read, which I thought was fabulous. Surprise!
Surprise!
Sweet.
I'm so shocked.
So I think it's neat, though, that no, they I'm do happy. These readathons and celebrate things like that, which mm-hmm. is, as you know, we all, Leaky, love the books, and so I thought that was really pretty cool. So
we should do a couple of podcasts where it's all just reading the books.
I would love that. You know, actually, I would love to. Well,
that would be awesome. I'd love to
get
sued.
Yeah, we don't get sued, you know.
Legal performances.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
That would be the highlight of my year.
But you know what's interesting, though, is because when, you know, Julie had given me a copy, an audio copy of the Haplet Prince audiobook, and to hear it when someone reads it out loud like that is just a different experience to me when I'm reading it. And I love books on tape. That's usually how I get through books anymore. And it's just fabulous. And I just think it's really cool that it'd be fun if we could do that, if Joe wouldn't please yell at us that we could read our favorite passages or something.
Yeah.
I actually started that already.
Did you?
I was thinking of maybe being able to do that one day. I'm actually halfway through the first book so far. I do excellent voices. My Hagrid is just dead on. Probably better than Robbie Coltrane's.
Let's hear it.
You have to ask.
Let's hear it.
No, you have to buy the book when it comes out in a few months.
Or years. Okay.
Buy my copies.
Let's go on to the fan interview because this is going down a dark path. Okay.
I hope Kelly can save the show.
Bring us Kimmy and Kelly! No.
Kelly and Kimmers, take it away, ladies.
In the fan corner, a one-on-one interview with a new lucky fan each week.
Not me! Not Hermione, you!
Hello, this is Kimberly Blair, and I am here with Kelly, otherwise known as Fox28, throughout the forum. She's one of our text chat mods. And we are here because Kelly is a teacher who has used Harry Potter in her classroom. And I was hoping perhaps she could discuss this a little bit with her, and we could get some insight. How are you doing today, Kelly?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Now, perhaps you want to start off by talking about your first experience using Harry Potter in the classroom.
It was in the fall of 2003, and it was my student teaching experience. I had a group of 8 boys who were in 8th and 9th grade. It was a self-contained special education classroom, and these boys had emotional and behavioral disabilities. I decided that I wanted to teach Harry Potter with them because I loved it so much, and I knew that they could relate well to Harry's life and the things that he went through. At the time, there were only the first 2 movies out, and I wanted to use the 3rd book, Prisoner of Azkaban, because I knew that they wouldn't be able to predict what was going to happen since the movie wasn't out at the time. I knew it would be hard to get them into the series because at the time many of them, you know, I knew they were against Harry Potter and they knew that I liked it. So I tricked them into reading the book by telling them that the main character is an orphan who lives with his aunt, his uncle, and cousin. I told them that these people are mean to him and that the main character excels in the sport that he likes to play. I also told them that in the story there's an escaped murderer. And then I asked the question, will the main character and the convicted killer make close contact, or will one of them die? And I actually had them write down their thoughts on it, because I knew that if they had it written down, they couldn't later go back and say that they didn't like it. They all wrote down what I thought they would write down. They all wrote that it sounded fascinating, that there was a murder in it. They wondered what was going to happen. They liked the character because he was good at sports. And they could relate to, you know, the family being mean to them. So then it came time for me to tell them what the book was that we were going to be reading. Mm-hmm. And I knew how they would react. And they did. They were completely shocked. And one of the boys even said, they call me Miss Kelly. One of the boys said, Miss Kelly, you tricked us. So I gave them a little time for it to sink in that we were going to read Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. And they were very annoyed, I think, at first, or upset. Mm-hmm. But after I pointed out that they all just wrote down what they thought it was so interesting and they thought it would be a great story to read, then they decided, you know, to give it a chance because they knew that I really liked it. I wanted for them to feel like they were equal with me, so I wanted to start a book club like adults do. You know, we sit in a circle and we talk about what we've read. I thought it would make them feel more comfortable, and so I gave it the name Miss Kelly's Club, and that name stuck, and they loved it, and, you know, later on, they were asking, you know, can we sit with Miss Kelly's Club today? Can we have Miss Kelly's Club? So,
aww,
it really caught on.
That's cool. Now, what was one of your typical lessons like?
Typically, we would sit down together and we would put our desks together and we would read, we would role play, act out the characters. And also there were times where because the book was so big, we had to read it independently. We also, we discussed it as well. And basically my lessons focused on characterization. For instance, we would compare Lupin and Snape as teachers and how their styles differ and, you know, whose class they prefer to be in. We also focused a lot on predictions because, like I said, the movie wasn't out at the time, so I was able to do that.
Yeah, that's definitely key.
We also talked about J.K. Rowling's writing style and how she used adjectives and adverbs, and we used that in our writing lessons as well so that they would practice writing like she did. You know, and that was a good part to compare, you know, that we're not only focused on our reading, but also that writing plays a big part in reading as well. When we started out, I was the primary narrator, and I asked the students to act out the characters. And at first, since they weren't really into the book, they didn't put any emotion into their reading.
Mm-hmm.
But soon, I noticed, after the first few lessons, they started to show the character's personality as they read.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty funny because they actually even tried British accents.
Wow.
Now and then. Which was fun to listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
Another part that was interesting is that no one wanted to play Hermione because she was a girl. And since I had all boys, nobody wanted to be the girl actress.
Aww.
However, one day a boy got really brave, and so he volunteered. He actually did such a great job. He had the voice, he had her mannerisms down, and the other boys actually respected him.
That's cool.
And after that day, they wanted to see if they could beat him.
Mm-hmm.
If they could be a better Hermione than he mm-hmm. could. So she became our most popular character to play. Which, looking back on it, is so funny now because nobody wanted to be her at first.
Yeah, that's funny.
Also, we had to read some parts independently, like I said before.
Yeah.
Because the book is so big and we can't just sit there and read the whole thing out loud. So I would ask them specific questions just to make sure that they were really reading it. We also had a few good conversations on more thought-provoking questions. One example would be, what do you think of the way that Malfoy treats Harry? And that always caused a lot of great debate in our class. At times, I would ask them to challenge me,
mm-hmm.
to meet, and this is the type of questions that really got them to read and look at specific events that happened in the book. I would ask them if they could stump me, if they could come up with a question they would have to ask me, and if I didn't know the answer to it, you know, then they would win. But they never did stump me, but they tried. They really tried.
Yeah, it's really good to see that because there's so many students who, you know, don't like to go home and read independently, but it's nice to see that you were really able to get them to really want to read on their own, and it seems like as they read more and more, they get more interested in the story, which I think is really neat in the questions you're able to ask, kind of get them to create a discussion about that.
Yeah, and it really motivated them, and they started getting excited over the period that I had with them. My last lesson that I had with them, I was only there for a semester, so we only were able to read up to chapter 11. So for my last lesson, I asked them to write, if they were J.K. Rowling, if they could write chapter 12 of the book since they hadn't read it yet. and they hated to write. I could barely get three sentences from them at all. They could do it, but they just didn't want to. They didn't like it. It was hard for them. So I didn't think my last lesson was going to go well at all. I didn't have any high expectations going into it. I asked them to write a page handwritten of what they predicted chapter 12 was going to be like. And during the lesson, I was very surprised. They all sat there completely silent. Nobody talked to each other. They were so focused on their work. And that wasn't even the best part. When they were finished writing, they all exceeded the minimum requirement.
Wow.
Most of them actually wrote 2 to 3 pages handwritten when I had just asked for one.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking back over them the other day, and I saw that one student actually wrote a page and a half that was typed single-spaced.
Wow, nice job.
Which he really got into it and wanted to type it out for me, which it would turn out to be a really great story. So at this moment, I was like grinning from ear to ear. I couldn't believe how well it had gone over. And then I decided that I was going to ask them to share their title. However, they actually insisted that we sit together, because at this point they were all writing at their individual desks.
Mm-hmm.
They, all eight of them, insisted that we sit together one final time in Miss Kelly's club to share their stories. They wanted to read their whole story to each other.
Oh, that's so cute.
So I was worried, because the lesson was going so unbelievably well, that I was worried that if we shared each other's stories, that they might laugh at each other or, mm-hmm. Say, that was stupid. Why did you do that? And I didn't want to ruin the lesson, but they kept insisting. So how can you resist that when they work so hard on their writing?
No, totally.
So I decided to take some precautions, and we talked about how to critique each other's work and how to be respectful. Also, I didn't have high expectations for this part either, because I was worried, nervous as their teacher, how it would go. But once again, they surprised me. They were so unbelievably kind to each other. Some of them even made connections to Joe's writing. One example was a student said to another student, "That sounds like how J.K. Rowling would write it."
Wow.
Which, that's such a big connection for them to take what they read, what she wrote, and connect it to that student's writing. And I'm sure it made that student feel really good as well.
Yeah, that sounds really great.
So at this point, we're sitting in our club, and they're reading their stories out loud to each other, and they're complimenting each other. I had tears in my eyes.
Aww.
I had tears in my eyes. It's probably still the best moment of my teaching career. It was.
I had my tears in my eyes just listening. Come on.
I did, and I was trying so hard, because here's these big 8th and 9th grade boys, and I'm trying so hard not to cry, but I was so proud of them, because I remember where they first came from, where they didn't want to read the book, and, they just went through the motions just because they had to do it, and then I thought of how into it they got, how they role-play the characters, how they wanted to play Hermione. And how they also, they hated to write, and I said before, I could barely get three sentences. For all of them to write as much as they did, it was a dream come true for a teacher. It was one of those moments that I'll never forget. It was one of my favorite moments
that
I'll take with me forever.
Now, you mentioned that you had to leave during the 11th chapter, at the end of the 11th chapter. Did you ever, were you able to come back and talk to them about it to kind of finish the book with them?
Yeah, at the time I was disappointed. I knew we wouldn't be able to finish the whole book. But my supervisor and teacher, he actually invited me to come back, in my spare time to finish the book. And I agreed, partly because I wanted to finish it, but also because the movie was coming out in June. Mm-hmm. And I thought it would be a nice experience if all of us went to see the movie together. Because it's a great accomplishment to read a book that size. And I thought that, that would be a nice treat to see the movie afterwards. And once again, we went to see the movie, and I was quite surprised by how they reacted to it. I thought that they would really enjoy the movie and, be so excited, and they were. They did enjoy the movie. However, after we watched the movie, we came back to the classroom, and we had a discussion about, if the book was better than the movie, what they thought. And all eight of them actually said that the book was better than the movie.
Wow, that's cool.
All of them. They said, and I asked them why, and, we had a nice discussion. They said that they were disappointed that some of the scenes mm-hmm. weren't in it. I had always talked about the scene with Trelawney at Christmas dinner with the 13 sitting down at the table. I told them that was probably one of my favorite scenes. And so they were expecting that in the movie, as I was too. And they were disappointed that that part wasn't in it, as well as some other parts. They also said, which I found interesting, is that you couldn't always tell Harry's thoughts in the movies. They said they enjoyed reading and knowing what he was thinking, but the movie doesn't always express that. And that's such a great connection, such a deep connection for them to make at that age. And for them to realize that, you know, books are fascinating, and sometimes you can't always get that out of the movie. And so once again, I was in teacher heaven.
Aw, that's so great. Well, that's a really great story, and thank you very much for sharing it with us.
Thank you.
Okay, so thank you very much for doing this interview, and hope to see you around the lounge.
Okay, thank you very much, Jimmy.
Okay, thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
And now it's time for Canon Conundrums. Listen in as our panel tries to figure out one specific issue from the Harry Potter canon.
Who could possibly figure that out?
And we're back with Canon Conundrums. 67.
Sue, so we got some friends with us.
I know. But we're missing one, but we have somebody.
Oh, she
we're missing...
Melissa wanted to take the cat for a walk, didn't she? Dawlish? Dawlish demands walks.
Yeah.
And he's very demanding.
Mooshka!
Yes.
Dawlish.
Mooshka.
Just call it Dawlish. But there's another female voice here joining us tonight.
Oh, no.
And, who is that?
And Melissa's trusty steed is good old Doris.
Hey, hi everybody. Hey, Sue. Hey, Don.
And good old Guru. Hey.
And Jason's here. Hello, Jason.
Hello. Yay.
Well, Jason, considering today you are standing in...
For the Ark?
For the Ark's trusty steed. let's give a little rundown of today's conundrum.
Okay. I don't even know if I can do this right. I think what we want to talk about is the Department of Mysteries, and will it figure into Book 7, and what's it all about?
And most specifically...
That room?
That locked room.
That room.
The magical room that melts pocket knives. That's its power.
Yeah, pretty
melt
much.
Weapons.
And that's a power that Lord Voldemort doesn't have.
Voldemort does not have the power to melt weapons.
Apparently.
Obviously not.
He's working on it, though.
But Harry has it a lot.
Harry can melt any weapon. Brilliant.
Abundance.
But other than melting weapons, I think something else this room can do has something to do with that power that Harry will use in the end to defeat Mr. Voldemort. What would that power be?
The power of love.
That's right. Oh,
All we need is love.
Exactly. So the conundrum today is related to, well, there's lots of things that make this a possible conundrum. And I think Sue did some sleuthing around and found a quote from Joe.
Yeah, Joe was asked when Melissa and Emerson went to Edinburgh and asked specifically about that room. And first it started out with that mysterious veil that we just still have a lot of questions about that's also in the Ministry of Magic. And Joe answered that veil's been there as long as the Ministry has been there, and the Ministry of Magic has been there, but not as long as Hogwarts, but a long time. We're talking hundreds of years. It's not particularly important to know exactly when, but centuries definitely. Melissa then asked, was it used as an execution chamber or just studying? No, it's just studying, answered Joe. The Department of Mysteries is all about studying. They study the mind, the universe, death. Melissa, are we going back to that room, that locked room? JKR, no comment.
Which means we're going.
Okay, now, so if we, presuming that it means yes, we are going back into the room,
yeah,
how
we are.
On Earth, what kind of scenario is going to take Harry there to begin with? Mm-hmm. Is there going to be some sort of battle leading us into the Ministry itself?
Yeah, it's as much of the why as it is the how. I mean, why go back to somewhere that was such a pivotal thing happened and in one of the other books?
You know, I think that's tied a lot to the quote where Dumbledore explains to him that room has a force. He says it contains a force that is at once more wonderful and more terrible than death, than human intelligence, than the forces of nature. It's the most mysterious of many subjects for the study that reside there. So I think that Harry is going to know that he has to get him back there somehow or other, and I think Voldemort's going to want to go back there to get something, another prophecy, another, you know, whatever, and Harry's going to get him back there. Maybe just the veil, who knows?
My thinking is that as much as I thought it would be awesome to have, like, the final battle, maybe partially, in the Ministry, mm-hmm. and a lot of people think that maybe Harry will finish off Voldemort through the same veil that Sirius fell, I think maybe that we'll come back here probably earlier on in the book, maybe midway through the book, when someone takes Harry there, when they discover that he can actually somehow train in this room.
Well, I wonder if he'll go in there. You know, I've thought about this a little bit, and I picture like him going inside the room and learning something about how to sort of harness the power, or maybe learning how to, I don't know, learning maybe secrets about love, or that he could go back and use maybe against Voldemort, or even just to convince him that somebody at some point has loved him. I don't know.
So if this door is locked, and you're saying go there and be trained, doesn't somebody have a key? And who are the gates?
Oh, no, you just have
how
to,
does Dumbledore know?
You just have to speak friend and enter.
Yeah, wait a minute, I've heard that before.
See, because I was kind of wondering, you know, we're talking about the past and stuff. I mean, what if James and Lily were not ours or ours, but were unspeakables? Thank you, Jason.
Do we know that they're not?
I mean, according to Vernon, he was unemployed or didn't work or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah,
I think that's all we've really heard.
So what if what they did had something to do with this room, and then that's how Harry... I don't know. I mean, that just seems to me, if this is so locked and nobody can get into that room.
Well, Harry could find the key in, like, in his inheritance or something when he comes of age.
Ooh.
And he gets more of his inheritance because he's of age when he's 17.
Under the squeaky floor or stair. Never mind.
Or, yeah, he'd find it in remains of Godric's Hollow, where he... most likely
exactly.
will be
well,
I mean, what do you imagine, like, is in this room? I mean, the way Dumbledore says it, it seems so mysterious, for lack of a better word. I mean, that power held within that room, is it sort of like has to be contained somehow because it can get out, or is it just that this room is like the best room for studying it, or is there something magical about the room itself that, like, helps you see? You know, if it is love, like, what, you know, how do you go in there and use it? Like, is it something tangible? Or
what is the tangible form of love? That's a very good question.
You know, or is it something that Harry can go in and sort of, you know, can, like, experience, you know, I don't know, like, he can kind of learn something in that room, and it's, like, will it impart him knowledge, or will it give him, you know, some kind of weapon?
What if somehow when you walk in there, all of the people and the things that you love in your own life appear in some form?
Oh, that
like,
would be
like
cool.
Like a ghost kind of thing,
somehow.
But like they can just appear. I don't know what that would accomplish. I don't know what that would do necessarily, but...
Well, like, you mean how they did when they had that, like, Fiori Incantatum or whatever, and they had that golden shield and all that?
Yeah.
The things came out. So what if they were in there and they helped him defeat Voldemort? Like, say that they were, like...
Voldy wouldn't have any allies, because...
No, he wouldn't, would he?
He wouldn't have any loved ones or... whatever.
I mean, I don't know if that means they could leave that room or not, or if they were just able to impart something on him.
Yeah, if they could just give him some the wisdom that he needs.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Because Dumbledore certainly left a lot of training for Harry to still need.
Yeah.
They learn how to control these powers or even use these powers.
And what's the deal with the... Is it true that, like... I mean, the room is locked. Is it something that nobody's been able to get in? I can't remember.
You have to figure someone's got a key. If you run a ministry, a government, you're probably going to have one guy in there. You know, maybe Hagrid has the key because
he's the keeper,
you know,
of the key.
Keeper of the keys and all. Maybe the ministry's Hagrid has the key.
Yeah, right. There's another Hagrid out there.
he wears his clothes are a different
Hagrid.
Color.
Yeah.
He's got blonde hair and beard.
I get the idea that, like, the Department of Mysteries is almost, like, built around... I mean, the way she says the veil has been there as long as the ministry has, like, you know, it kind of... You get this idea, like, there are these mysterious things that kind of existed, and they built this whole complex around it. Like, we don't know what to do with this veil and this love room and this other stuff, so let's just build a room around them to study them. I don't know.
I think that makes good sense for the veil, but I can't imagine two of the most powerful things on earth being happen to be in the same spot.
Unless somebody else
to build
a
room
there.
Around.
Yeah. But yeah, that's true.
Well, but okay, so say he gets this. I mean, this force is so great. I keep going back to that quote that you were talking about, Doris, when from Goblet of Fire. You know, that power that took you to save Sirius, the power that Voldemort cannot bear to...
Yeah. It says the power saved you from possession by Voldemort. So he doesn't even want to be around it.
There's probably no little chance that Voldemort would think to somehow use it himself because he probably...
He wouldn't want to be around... Now, okay, this is kind of interesting. What if Harry were to somehow or other just to get that force around him? Not so much to use it against him, but if Voldemort doesn't want to be in him because that force is in him, then if that force is kind of around him, like the people that love him are surrounding him, Voldemort wouldn't even want to be around it. You know, I mean, maybe that's all he has to learn in there is he can't, Dumbledore said it, you know, he needs the trio. I mean, all three of them have to be together. Maybe that's kind of part of it. Maybe that love that they have for each other, that, you know, willingness to die for each other is something he can't defeat.
You know, what I've always thought, and this was a weird thing I had talked about the other day, just my friends or my blog, I was thinking about that scene that, what made me mad about Voldemort is that he took, when he did the thing about...
That makes me mad.
Frank, it does, about Frank and Alice Longbottom, that he denied Neville that chance to grow up with a parent, to have family holidays, to know what it is to, like, hug his mom and dad. Mm-hmm. And I always thought, you know, now it's holiday time and we're watching, like, one of my favorite movies is that It's a Wonderful Life, you know? And it kind of reminds me of that Pensieve thing. And so what if Voldemort goes into this room and sees all this love that he's never had, you know, because I just thought that would be the perfect way to show, like George Bailey did, you know, went through it and saw what he could have had, that Voldemort could have realized, be felt this power of love that he could have had, and he never had. I don't know. It just makes me mad.
Yeah, you really got that something there, too. And I'm thinking, my whole theory about how he's going to eventually do this is it's going to be more of a battle of minds and things across the Scarlink than any physical force. And I think Harry's going to learn how to project feelings of love through that Scarlink the way Voldemort had been projecting the opposite feelings to his entire life. And, you know, he probably will feel all of those things Sue just talked about in like a matter of instants. And it's going to be so overwhelming, all of those feelings pushed into his mind through that Scarlink that would be enough to kill him because it's coming across in such large quantities.
Wow.
And all the feelings that he had never felt all at once from Harry.
So are you saying Harry
knowing that he'll never feel them.
Are you saying that Harry has to feel... Oh, okay, I think you just clarified. Does Harry have to feel it for Voldemort, or does Harry feel that love for everyone else and just exchange it with him or just give it to him?
I think it's...
Well, that'd be freaky.
Yeah, I don't know if he's going to be necessarily giving it to him, and I don't think he even has to have compassion for Voldemort, but I think he will, and I think all of that combined, Harry will figure out, you know, the way to use this most effectively is to concentrate it in his most potent form and to send that over the Scarlink. One other point, though, is that the book deals a lot in opposites, and there's a lot of opposites to every force and everything in his books. And one thing we learned recently, or not, I guess too recently, but these unforgivable curses, is you have to mean them for them to work. Uh-huh. You have to really want to do the spell you're doing. And I think there very well could be an opposite to that, an opposite way to power a spell, is you have to really feel the opposite of hatred.
Right.
And you have to have those feelings of love in order to boost up these spells. Or maybe there's even special spells we don't even know about yet. What is possible?
Cool. That'd be cool.
And maybe he can learn all about that power in this room. Maybe it's a power that not many people know about or know how to use.
Do you ever think that something will come to a point that you were talking about the trio, that Harry will come to a point and he won't want to love? He will be so brokenhearted that something will happen to, you know, God forbid, to say Hermione or Ron and he become or Ginny and he Harry will be so devastated at that point that he won't need won't be able to find that love within him and he'll have to go to this room to like you said to recharge or something.
Yeah, well, you know what I've thought of is almost kind of something similar. Is not that he's not able to love, but he doesn't want people to love him. Because he wants them to be safe. Because he kind of did that at the end. He broke it off with Ginny. And he said, you know, I've got to do this. He's going to be after me. And, you know, he left her to protect her. So, I don't know. I mean, he's kind of, I could see him doing more of that. I can't imagine him not loving, though, because that's his thing. Yeah. That's what he has. That's his gift. I don't know.
I mean, he may have doubt for a while, but... I don't think it would last more than a few chapters or something, because really there's only one book, and he has to have this whole big arc of discovering this love, and he's got to get back with Ginny. I mean, it's just like at the end of the last book, Professor McGonagall is like, oh, Dumbledore, he would love nothing more than seeing this display of, you know, this love with Lupin and Tonks, and talking about how that is how things should be. As kind of preluding to the relationships in Harry's life, his friends, the trio, and getting with Ginny and everything. It's like as much love as he can surround himself with, he's more strong.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, love is certainly a power. You know, it's a force. It's people have gone to war over it. You know, fortunes have been won and lost. Lives have been destroyed and you know, gained in some sense because of love. So, I mean, look at the force that it is. So.
Yeah.
Wow, that's so, you know, I know it's so deep, but you're like, wow, you're right.
No,
you know?
Like, how do we come down from that?
Like, whoa, love conquers all. Ooh.
It does.
It's going to end up being the theme of our whole series that we're probably going to discover here in this last book. Everything comes down to it. Every action and motivation from these good characters was rooted in it. And every time we see some powerful magic on the part of these good guys, it's been rooted in love, all the way back to the sacrifice of Lily with Harry.
Yeah.
I mean, something powerful enough to deflect the killing curse, that's got to be rooted in maybe the oldest, most powerful magic.
Yeah.
That they keep locked up in our room because
the magic
no one
of the
understands
mother's
it
love.
Enough.
You think they're... I mean, why is it locked in there like that? I mean, are they afraid of it? Are they, can it get away? Like, are they trying to contain it, you know, or is it trying to protect it from people who would misuse it?
Maybe they just lock it up to keep it there so they can study it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they're supposed to be doing down there, studying things.
Yeah, like, I just don't get it. Like, I can't imagine what is actually...
Why would you lock love up?
Yeah, like, how do you
exactly.
take, you know, I mean, if it, you know, maybe Dumbledore is kind of speaking in his, you know, kind of mysterious way. Like you said, how do you lock love up? It's not just like the love, the emotion or the feeling or the concept or the idea that's in that room. Is it like there's got to be something
there has to be more to it. Like something. I don't know what. Something.
I don't know because, you know, sometimes I am such a big Hufflepuff. We all know this. Emotional.
Are you really? I never knew that.
I know. Shocking. But, you know, how you like, I tell my friends all the time I love them, but sometimes saying I love you is the hardest thing in the world to do.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's why they were trying to, you know, like you said, lock it up to continue, just to study it, to understand why it is, how we can feel so much of it. At the same time, we can be so afraid of it.
Maybe it has something to do with the magical spell of love, like the old magic that's been alluded to, and the old magic that Lily left, you know, in Harry. And maybe it has something to do with that magic, and not necessarily love itself, but love definitely has something to do with it.
I mean, you think it's possible that maybe what's in there is the extent of the research they have thus far about that power? More than the actual power itself?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, for a while I thought that the melting of that key was because there's some kind of energy so strong on the other side of the door. But maybe it was just as simple as that's just kind of the security measure they had on the door.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, it's very, very tricksy, and I'm not sure if we solved anything in our...
I don't think we did. I don't know.
Segment here,
but it's a burning thing.
Well, I think we can definitely solve the conundrum of if they will be returning to this room just based off of Joe's comment.
Yeah, yes. That sounds, her no comment, you mean.
Her no comment. That speaks volumes in itself.
Yes, it does.
But I guess final thoughts and predictions?
Well, I think that they're definitely going back there, but exactly what's going to happen there, I don't know. But I know it's going. I think it'll be pivotal.
Well, I'm going to stick with my George Bailey pensive kind of combination thing, that they're definitely going back there, and I think it will be used as a, not melt Voldemort, but it'll be used as a way for Harry and Voldemort to both see what they had and what they could have had.
Mm. Do you think of Harry will bring Voldemort there, or just Harry will go there?
Okay, I think Voldemort will go there, too.
Woohoo! I'm with you now. I think this is like the fifth place I think that the final confrontation will be.
I know.
I keep changing my mind, but like it just seems so perfect to me all of a sudden that, there might be some battle raging elsewhere, but Harry and Voldemort will be facing each other in this place where Harry, for once, finally has the advantage and Voldemort's downfall.
Well, my final thought, I suppose, is that wise person, possibly from the Order, maybe an old friend of Dumbledore, someone who's basically going to be taking over for guiding Harry through this last... It could be Dawlish. Dawlish could come up... Let's say Dawlish does this. Dawlish will take Harry into the Love Room because he has the keys. He is good friends with the Hagrid of the Ministry.
Right.
The big blonde half a giant.
Yeah.
And, for real, he'll come back into this room and he will learn about this power that he has and learn how to control it and to concentrate it. And he will use this love power through his curse link, scar link with Voldemort. Mm-hmm. And that he will knock him out that way. Well, this is a fun topic.
Yeah.
Can we think of any topics possibly for next week?
Peter Pettigrew, my friend.
Yeah,
that's a giant thing we have not tackled.
Yes, well, we will be checking the voicemails now. Again, it's been a while, but send in your voicemail if you think you have a thought on Peter Pettigrew or any other voicemails, for that matter, to the regular spot. Information's on podcast.com. And we'll push it on through the next part here, boys and girls. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah,
bye-bye.
Thanks, Forrest.
Oh, thanks, Jason.
Forrest and Lagoon.
Yeah.
Catch you later.
See you guys.
Bye.
All right. Podcast 57 went by in a blink.
Woo.
It's like Santa.
Wink.
For show.
Did you fill out your list? Did you write Santa yet? John, have you written for your wish list? What you want for some...
My wish list?
Uh-huh.
I'm working on it. It's just...
Like your wish list on thecauldronshop.com.
There's just so much on that thing, on that cauldron shop, to wish for.
Mm-hmm.
And... they are no longer selling my life-size Dobby, which is heartbreaking.
I know.
And it was $100 for a while.
I know. For a while, you could buy it for just a hundy. Oh. Crazy.
I know. We got to look for it for you on eBay.
The things I wouldn't do with a life-size Dobby.
I shudder.
Let's not elaborate. Yeah.
I shudder to think, John. Oh, my God.
Hey, guys. Christmas and the holidays are coming, so we are going to be doing silk shows, your Christmas songs.
I love silk
shows. Harry
Potter.
Yay!
Me too, and they've gotten so much better and better over this year that I can't wait to see what comes in. The deadline for that will be December 18th.
Ooh, get it in. Come on, people.
Ooh. Two shows.
Can't wait.
The two shows after that will be
spooky. Come in, sing your songs. Do them about Christmas or Hanukkah or the Kwanzaa, or anything you want to sing about.
Yeah.
Festive.
Well, that's in a holiday
Related to the holiday season.
Right.
Don't sing about, ham.
Ham?
So actually, in Puerto Rico, they sing about ham and pork around Christmas time.
Oh, my God. Do they really?
If we have any Puerto Rican listeners, please... send in one of your Puerto Rican Christmas songs and prove to these girls what I'm talking about.
Really? That's interesting.
We don't not believe you, John. We believe you.
Maybe I'll actually learn a Puerto Rican Christmas song by the time I come onto the show next.
I have a question, though, about Christmas foods. What is figgy pudding? Bring us a figgy pudding.
Oh,
I want to know.
I don't know.
I think it's a feline tasting pudding dessert.
Ew, John.
I don't want to think that. Oh.
You're disgusting.
Well, anyway, this by December 18th, you can take a holiday tune and have the words be nothing about the holidays and all about Harry. That's fine. Just
oh, that's
do something
how that works.
Holiday-ish.
Yeah. Don't just call in and sing us like Jingle Bells and not change
people
a single
have done
word.
It. People have done it.
Really? That's
yes.
Awesome. And what was our rule from last year about what one song they were not allowed to do?
12 Days of Christmas.
No.
Yes,
no.
Do not do that. We will not air it.
Because it's so long. I thought we aired about two of them last year.
Well, this year we will not. You
well,
can
last
email
year they did
say,
them on chipmunk speed.
Yeah, you go ahead and email and be like, I spent 12 hours on this. An hour for every day of Christmas. It'll be like, that's 12 hours wasted. We're not airing it. We're not putting it on the show.
I would like somebody to do a Philip of Merry Christmas Baby.
Yeah.
I love that song.
Aww.
Merry Christmas Baby. Yeah. It's very hip.
Never even heard of it.
Jazz.
Oh,
John. B.B. King does it. It's a jazzy Christmas song. It's awesome.
I've been getting into...
That'll be easy to find that karaoke
I've been getting
file.
Into Christmas music, and our friend Alex has a great one from the Ramus Lupins. Has a new Christmas song out.
Oh, speaking of Christmas and Harry Potter rockers, I think I am going tomorrow to the U Ball in Boston.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, meaning it's Saturday now. And yeah, so I just decided, what the heck, I'm going to go. I don't know how this is going to work. I'm going to take a 3-hour train ride home early Monday morning to go to it. So I'll bring back interviews and pictures and videos and all that fun stuff.
Do you need a date for this? The U Ball.
Well, I'll get a date.
Whoa.
I'll make
a news post.
Did I have a date?
John.
No,
it is pretty newsworthy, I have
you
to say.
You want to go to the Yule Ball with Melissa?
No.
Email andrew@staff.modelcast.com.
No.
I'll probably be going staff, but that's cool.
You're going Rudolph Patronus.
Rudolph Patronus. Take that picture, guys. I have a little challenge. Take that picture.
Ooh.
And dress him up as a reindeer.
There you go.
Picture of Harry with the Rudolph Patronus coming out, and dress him up. Then you can make Harry Santa and make the whole picture complete.
And then make a picture of Ron looking like Yukon Cornelius.
Yukon, oh, from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. I love that, and the Island of Misfits.
Okay.
Voices.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We are just.
Who doesn't love Yukon Cornelius?
I don't know him by name, but I know the show.
Be a
Herbie
dentist.
The dentist. I love Herbie.
Oh, Herbie. You talked about Herbie last year on Christmas time.
Did we?
I love him.
Yeah, you
it's
did.
It's a classic. It's a great.
Oh,
your recycling joke.
Bumble's awesome.
Bumble the Yeti or whatever he is.
And then we have New Year's. Okay, anyway, guys. Anyway.
They just remastered that for HD somehow. That's a trick.
What?
The Rudolph movie.
I love that movie.
Oh, wow.
I have that. I like that. Silver and gold. I have that soundtrack.
Aw.
Well, we are taking a little bit of a break from our fan challenge for a while, from our blog challenge, so that will come back after we go into 2007. But you guys have still been giving us great little shout-outs on MySpace, and so we wanted to give you the same back. So
well,
we got
big thank yous from MySpace recently because of how many people we've been sending to our profile page. MySpace's stats have just been doing very well, so we got a big thank you from that Tom guy.
Yeah, Tom likes us a lot. Okay.
I was happy to receive that.
Well, Sue, why don't you get it going? Never mind. This is when you comment that you've put us in your top friends list or you send us a message that you've put us in your top friends on MySpace. You get a shout-out.
Right, and we've heard from the Salem Witches, Val, Kara, So Dalish, Great Lady Ravenclaw, Jedi Forever, Kaylee, Shaw, London, Neville and I, Kelly, and Heath Miller.
Okay, we've also heard from Lorenzo, Lucy and the PCBS staff, Lirin, Looney Old Fan, Charlotte, Emily, Lisa, Bryce, Hare, all right, Mr. T, what are you talking about? That's actually the guy from Different Strokes, isn't it? That's not what Mr. T does. He goes like,
Pitty-Foo, that's right.
Pitty-Foo.
That's right, he's got all this chance.
Air and Zeru, Caitlin, Carrie Blueberry, David, Maya Ray, Helen, Carrie, Amanda, Sherry, Andy, and I read it in Hogwarts, A History.
Ooh. And Michael, I know Michael sent me one too. Hi, Michael. Yes, oh, so you okay. Cool. Look how I love it.
Our MySpace is at myspace.com/podcast. There are links there for you to go to the page where you can get your own layout stuff and your own flash players to put on your own site of Podcast. And
we all have our own pages too. And we have John's musical background today and fabulous MySpace.
Yeah, because we stopped him from saying any of the names.
What happened?
After last week's catastrophe.
Yes, I'm grounded.
Yeah.
All I'm allowed to do is sing the hamster dance song in the background.
Oh, the hamster dance.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, I think it's time.
Just go. You're wasting time.
Is that the end? Is that just go? You're wasting time. I think I might have heard it all the way from editing land.
Yeah. All the way from editing land. Well, let's put the editors out of their misery. Yeah. We'll see you next week for the last real podcast before we go on silky holiday.
Well, no, what are you talking about? We're going to be there every week recording the silk shows.
I know, it's still be a real podcast, but it's the last regular podcast before the silk shows.
Actually, we're going to hire in some stand-ins for us. They'll sound a little bit like us, and you probably wouldn't be able to tell a difference had I not
told
you.
Way to go, John. Ruin the illusion.
But,
Nice, John. Nice.
We'll edit this out.
Here's another challenge for you filkers. Have some of your songs be the New Year's songs, like the Auld Lang Syne and that kind
That's
of thing.
Great.
Oh, yeah.
In the second week. Because that'll be New Year's. That'll be New Year's Eve, actually. You know?
Do one to that song and like have it be like the Potter Year on Review.
Yeah, that would be great. Okay, thank you. I would appreciate that. You know, I'd actually thought about doing like a song version
and
of
I'm
that.
Unsuited.
Sing it. A lot of news this year. And here we go. If you can stand it in your ears. And there's books. I don't know.
Is that a New Year's song? So you should do it all on super speed. We should
I'll
have the news for the last week to speak the entire year, and then we speed it up. So it's two as a chipmunk.
Oh man,
doing
if they thought my squeen
Potter.
Was bad before, wait till they hear me on like, you know, on helium doing squeen chipmunk thing.
Oh man.
You know that I met up with Alex of the Remus Lupins and he said and he was wearing a Hufflepuff outfit at some event, he told me, and somebody walked up to him and said, "Squee!" And he was like, "No." And he's like, I'm sorry, I love Sue.
Oh, really?
That's awesome.
So, yeah. Sue, you don't understand. You are now the official, like, Harry Potter Hufflepuff all over the place.
Oh, and about time to.
You are the most famous Hufflepuff in the world,
you know what?
I do believe.
Someone needs to give us a voice because Hufflepuffs, baby, are the salt of it. We have backbone.
Because there were no voices before.
Or they get killed.
They get killed
by Voldemort. That's why.
The school of music.
I know. We have a martyr.
We're
now.
So good.
House
we're
of music.
So easily picked
it.
Off.
Okay.
Gotta be strong.
Before she gets all Cedric-y, can we get out of here?
Oh, Dios mios. Okay.
Okay.
Sounds like a plan. See you next week.
Goodbye. Goodbye, my lovies.
We've missed it.
Toby is free.
I confess myself disappointed.
Now. If you don't mind, I'm going to bed.
Great Scott, no wonder. Look at the time. We've been here nearly 4 hours. Spooky how the time flies when one's having fun.